Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's the Opperman Report. Join digital forensic investigator and PI Ed Opperman for an in-depth discussion of conspiracy theories, strategy of New World Order resistance, high-profile court cases in the news, and interviews with expert guests and authors on these topics and more. It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman. You can find me at Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting, either through my website, emailrevealer.com, or you could just email me directly at OppermanInvestigations@gmail.com. Now, if you like our content and you like the show, be sure and check out our Patreon, Opperman Report Patreon, where I put up new content, exclusive content there each month, but also, too, all the stuff you hear here on AMFM Radio, we put up there with no ads. We cut out the commercials on the Patreon. But our archives are always free. Go to Spreaker.com, and you can find the show there for free. All the old shows. I do an exclusive show there every Friday night. And you get an email notification, and there's a chat room anytime we put up new content. We got a fascinating guest today. His name is Chris. He's an investigative producer from Los Angeles. He's written a book called Ron's Revenge, which is kind of out of print. It's kind of hard to get, but you can probably find it if you really search for it. And we're talking about this new story that's, well, not really that new, because there was a book written about it way back called If I Did It. We're talking about the O.J. Simpson case. And our friend here, Chris, today says he has some exclusive information about a fellow out there who's kind of confessing to being O.J.'s accomplice. Chris, do I have that right?
Hey, Ed. Yeah, you sure do.
Well, before we get into all of that, tell us about yourself. Who is Chris, the investigative producer from L.A.?
Yeah, and I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been in Hollywood for about 25 years. I'm an investigative producer, a writer, author. I was a director at one point. I mainly worked in the scripted world, movies, TV shows. I did some reality shows. At one time, I was an actor. I was a stuntman. I did a lot of, I was a hyphenated guy in Hollywood, like many of us are. And over the last 7 years, I started to work more true crime stories about the mafia, serial killers. I worked with victims and the killers themselves. I would kind of do both sides, and I had a unique ability. Sometimes I take a spiritual approach to my cases and kind of look to God for help, or maybe sometimes the devil. I mean, so there's dark aspects to the stories, and there's light aspects. There's hope, closure, healing that I hope to bring. And I've been hired on multiple cases, civilian and famous. I worked Natalie Wood, Aaron Hernandez, JonBenet Ramsey, Emmett Till, Sierra Lamar, the Cal Five, the Delphi girls. And so my journey for the last 7 years has been all crime. Okay. All violent crimes against children, women and men. And I was approached about 4 years ago by a guy who I had known. He was a producer in Hollywood. And he said, I have this OJ thing coming down the pike. And at first, I didn't want to do it because I said, you know, I don't know too much about the OJ case. I was in college when it happened. I did live the story. I remember where I was when the Bronco chase happened and the acquittal. And I do remember the significance of it, but I didn't know too much about the case. And they said, well, look, you know, you do some pretty dirty stories, and this could be something that you could help us on. And so after a while, after about 6 to 7 months of talking with them, I did come on board. I was allowed to meet Charlie. I was allowed to talk to him, read his materials, hear some of his confession tape, see some of his written confession. And he claimed that he was with O.J. Simpson at the Brentwood murders in 1994. In the beginning, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, let me stop you for a second. Now, is this the same Charlie that they mentioned, that O.J. mentioned in the book, If I Did It?
Correct.
Okay, well, one of the things that is coming at me is people are saying that that was made up by Pablo. Pablo came up with the name Charlie.
Well, no. And one thing you have to look at is O.J. is a narcissist and very controlling. He would never let anyone write anything about him with his name on it that he did not control every single word. I know Pablo. I've talked to him multiple times. I know a lot of the people from the case. This is a 3-year journey for me as an investigator, as a source, as an informant. I had to trick some people as to who I was when I talked to them. I met a lot of the witnesses. I spoke to a lot of the people on this case. Pablo was a ghostwriter. OJ wrote that book.
And for the audience, Pablo was the dog walker. He was also a witness at the case. Right? How do you pronounce his last name?
Pablo Fengres.
Fengres,
and
right.
And also, yeah, and also, you know, just a lot of these people are very symbolic and indicative of the mess up, the bumbling. Pablo testified at the trial, and then all these years later, he writes OJ's book. Think about that. Now, he lives behind Nicole. He's in the alley on the other side of the alley, and he says he hears a dog's plaintive wail at 10:20 p.m. He's wrong. It's not 10:20 p.m. It's 10:35. And so his timing was off, and Marcia Clark and Chris Darden based their entire timeline off of him and, like, one other dog walker. He was at home. He wasn't really, like, a dog walker. He was, like, watching the news or whatever. And so these couple people say, oh, it's about 10:20. So Marcia Clark bases the entire timeline off this 10:20, the murder start. They don't. There's multiple witnesses that say it was dead silent. Nothing, no dogs, nothing till 10:35. So it's kind of that incestuous Beverly Hills thing that I did talk about in my book, about how these people all know each other. They all kind of stick up for each other. They're like this little clique, and he got it wrong. And unfortunately, one of the biggest bumbles of the case was that Marcia Clark and Chris Darden and Goldberg, and they kept the timeline to start so early, and that's not when it started. And that was one of their downfalls, because they kept thinking O.J. couldn't do it so fast. He's O.J. Simpson. He was one of the fastest humans alive. He could do it that fast.
Well, let's not get too distracted with timelines and all that kind of stuff, because now we have a new person here coming forward. And you say that you've heard confession tapes?
Yes. Charlie Ehrlich is his name. And Charlie is a former mobster from New York City and Miami. And yes, he made a tape with a producer in Los Angeles, and it's 10 hours long.
Okay, now he knew he was being taped?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It was a project. It was a movie. It was a movie project about his life of crime, and you got to show the murders on June 12, 1994 through his eyes, through his POV.
Right. Well, tell us about Charlie Ehrlich. Who's Charlie Ehrlich?
Charlie is a mobster from the Genovese crime family, going back many years. And like a lot of the guys, like the Ippolitos, Joey Ippolito and his brothers, they were born into the mob. His father worked for Meyer Lansky in New York. And they eventually relocated to Miami, where a lot of the guys did, because that's where all the drugs came from. And that was the hub. And Meyer Lansky lived down there. And Joey Ippolito and Charlie and many other guys, Ben Kramer, Don Arino. Why do you think they all lived in Miami? Because that's the hub. That's where Columbia sent the drugs to. And they raced these speedboats. And Joey Ippolito is a very big character in this. That's why I'm going to say his name a lot. He's the key. He knew OJ. He knew AC Collings. He set an extortion on June 12th for about $100,000. And OJ overreacted and took it way too far. They weren't trying to kill anyone. They were trying to get OJ to pay up the money. And Joey had extorted a lot of people, famous people. That's what he did. That was his whole MO. So Charlie is a mobster from New York and Miami, and they use these race boats to smuggle drugs. And you can look it up. You'll see that's who Don Arino was. They killed him in 1987. The mafia, the outfit in Chicago, sent two killers down, and they killed him because he was going to be subpoenaed to start testifying against the Italians and against the Colombians. They're all tied together.
Okay, so we have Charlie Ehrlich, Genovese family, and Joey Eppolito, drug dealer, again, organized crime, drug dealer down
there. The Cavalcante family.
There you go, down in Miami, okay? Now, what is their connection to O.J. Simpson?
So Joey Eppolito befriends O.J. Simpson, actually, in the 80s. And O.J. was dealing with a lot of these kind of nefarious characters for many years. I have pictures of O.J. with Nicole buying a speedboat from a guy named Thomas Adams. Now, Thomas was murdered like months after that picture was taken. There was another guy named Eugene Hicks, and that's not his real last name. He was a mob guy, too, and they used to run these boat shops in Thunder Alley, which is everyone knows is the famous alley where Don Arino was killed and ran his boats. So Eugene Hicks and Thomas Adams sell O.J. Simpson a speedboat in like 83, and Nicole's there pictured on it. Why does he know these people? See, so the little clues are going to start to pop up, and those guys get murdered. Eugene Hicks gets shot and stabbed in his place in Hallandale where Meyer Lansky lives and Joey Eppolito. What a coincidence. So O.J. was dealing with these people at Turnberry Isle. In his suicide letter, he thanks Mark Packer. He thanks B. Wayne Hughes. He thanks Don Sofer. Why does he know these people? Because he golfs with them, and they're big in the prostitution thing. Donna Rice was a mob hit. You can talk about that if you want. It's a fascinating story about what the Donna Rice thing really was to destroy Gary Hart for George Bush. So O.J. was mixed up in these mob guys, and Joey had relocated to Los Angeles and started to work that territory. He had less heat.
Chris, let me ask you this. I was told by a former LAPD intelligence cop that the day of O.J.'s slow speed chase, that the cops had pulled off surveillance on his house over there, and that the plan was is that Joey Eppolito had a boat ready to go down there in Florida, and I think Fort Lauderdale, to spirit O.J. away. Do you know anything about that story?
Well, I don't know that Joey Eppolito. It's interesting you say that because there was a rumor that he was trying to escape, right?
Yeah.
And go to Florida or Mexico. Now, right there, you're already onto the trail. Well, why is Joey Eppolito even involved with O.J. Simpson? And why wasn't his name used in the trial? Why does his name never come up in the trial? Because it's a setup. It's a ruse. They protected him. They protected Charlie Ehrlich. Why didn't anyone say Charlie Ehrlich's name during the investigation when the guys knew someone else was there? Even the beat, there's a reporter in LA who came to me as a source and goes, you know, on the night of the murders, I was in a chat room with the LAPD, just happened to be in there. And right away, they started talking about a cocaine hit.
Hmm.
I'm like, well, why is everyone talking about drugs? And they know more about the case than the LAPD does and Marcia Clark. So, yeah, but I don't know. He could have whisked him away. Joey was jumped bail. He was supposed to be in jail on June 12th. And they have a lot of phone records that Joey was talking to Rockingham, calling Rockingham for weeks before because he's trying to get his money.
Yeah, yeah, real quick, you talk about two people being there at the crime scene. The prosecutor's own medical examiner, their own witness at the prelim, said that there were likely two knives and two killers.
Correct.
Right.
And Dr. Irwin Golden.
And they didn't call him at the trial. They didn't call him.
They booted him off the case.
Right. They called a guy who wasn't even involved to testify.
Well,
talk about a drug debt, okay? Now, what kind of drug is it? Are you saying that O.J. and Nicole and others around them were involved in weight kind of dealing, or this was personal use that they owed debt for?
Both. Okay. Both. Cocaine.
Well, explain to us what.
Sure. So in Charlie's confession, when he goes to O.J.'s Rockingham mansion at 10:15 p.m. on June 12th, the night of the murders, he says to him, look, you got to keep everything cool between you and Joey. And O.J. starts to get mad. He's like chipping golf balls in his yard. He's waiting for the limo. He's not planning on going anywhere. The limo's coming in like 9 minutes, okay? When he goes there, O.J. says, yeah, come on in. What's going on? Hey, we need to straighten this out. You know, Nicole and Faye Resnick and this guy Keith Z, you know, they're running up tabs. Joey wants his money. Well, why are you squeezing me, OJ says? And that's the key word, squeeze. Why are you squeezing me? Because you're the famous one, and you're the easy target.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And they're all connected to you. You have the money. You're the target. You're the duck on the pond. And Joey set that up. And he did it brilliantly. Unfortunately, they took it too far and they shouldn't have killed anyone. OJ basically should have just said, all right, how much I owe you? 85.5. No problem. Give me 2 days. I'll hook it up. No, instead OJ says, no, it's Faye and Nicole's fault. Let's go over there and we'll go scare the crap out of her. That was what OJ says in his book. I looked at my watch. I had just enough time to go read Nicole the Riot Act.
Now, would Nicole and Faye and those characters have 100K sitting around to pay off these?
They don't. Faye Resnick didn't. She lived off other people. She didn't have a job.
Right.
And look, the way many people I've dealt with this case, and I'm appreciative of everyone on my journey, and no one's ever going to understand my full journey on this. The way to sum it up, the best way I do it, also in the book, also in the investigation file, I have a murder book. It's over 10 pages long with the evidence and the proof that Charlie was there and all this, is to basically say this. In L.A. and Hollywood, there were a lot of drugs, a lot of drug use. The mob guys, in the 90s, the mob was still raging. The mob didn't die in 87 with John Gotti and go. No, it still was going in the 90s, okay? A lot of drug use. Faye Resnick, Nicole Brown, Keith Z, a lot of the people, they wrote the book, You'll Never Make Love in This Town Again, about Heidi Fleiss and all the prostitutes. They're all connected to OJ. They're all tied. The gal, Tiffany, she was Larry Elder's gal. She worked for Heidi Fleiss. A kid got murdered named Brett Cantor. Another kid named Michael Nigg. They think those were connected. Why? What are all the connections? Drugs, okay? And the party scene in the club. So it's kind of like, to sum it up, is this. Joey Ippolito sets an extortion on the biggest whale he can, which is O.J. Simpson. All the people underneath him, yes, they're involved. Yes, they owe him some money. Yes, they're tied to his guys some way, somehow, and he's the alpha male. So he's coming to the top dog and saying, you're going to pay up. Okay? So it's like, it's kind of everybody's fault. But the real fault has to lie on O.J. Simpson. That's why Charlie says that. It's O.J.'s fault. O.J. did it. He made us catch two bodies. He made me go with him in the Bronco to Nicole's. I didn't want to go. I knew it was bad news. But when you're a mob guy and you're all hopped up and they're high and they're all angry and they want their money, that's what they do. That's their job. They kill people. They extort people. So I hope that makes it kind of clear as, like, I don't want to say, oh, it's Faye's fault. It's not their fault that they to murder someone. It's just this kind of dance in the drug world. And look, there were a lot of murders in LA that were drug related. Look them up. There's a lot in my research too. Last thing I'll say about this part, in my research, when I started to open these doors, I couldn't believe how much rampant drug use and dealing there was. There were guys robbing each other like that weren't in the mob. There were gangs. They called them the 18th Street Gang. There was MS-13. They'd cross over. The mob would hire those guys to hit some. It was literally a cesspool of debauchery, okay? And people got caught up, and they died.
And like you say, too, that the Heidi Fleiss girls, and there's a lot of crossover and all that kind of stuff, too, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Charlie Ehrlich does have a connection to OJ. He was there in Las Vegas in that hotel room, strong-arming mm-hmm. those guys.
Correct.
Trying to get back the material.
Yep.
So there is a document. He was a co-defendant. There's a documented connection between Charlie Ehrlich and OJ Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as far as I understand, Charlie Ehrlich says he didn't meet OJ until Florida in 2001.
Well, of course he does. Of course he does, because he's a liar, because that's what he does. And he also told me and the other producers he wasn't in the room in Vegas. He wasn't there. He was in the getaway car. Well, guess what? When I met OJ's best friend, who was there in the room, he said Charlie was right there. So again, they're not going to tell you. It's like asking Ted Bundy, were you in Utah in 1978? No.
That's funny. I just did a whole
night. What are they going to tell you? Ask John Wayne Gacy. Did he murder all those kids?
I just did a whole night on Bundy. Bundy Sunday.
Oh, really?
All my repeats on Bundy.
Oh, really?
But let me ask you.
Oh, they
you
can't
this.
Get off him, yeah.
That's right. Well, he's, we're not going to get him off. But back to the Las Vegas hotel room. Without mentioning any names, do you know have any information about an attorney being down in a car down there in a parking lot?
What do you mean in a parking lot?
Yeah, do you have any information, without mentioning any names, of an attorney being down in a car, down in the parking lot, waiting for this deal to go through? Probably not.
I do not.
Okay, good. Okay. Now, Howard Weitzman was OJ's attorney, but he withdrew from the case. Now, could that, and he said a conflict of interest. Now, could that be possibly connections to Joey Ippolito?
Well, I mean, I can drop a shocker here for you if you want one right now about Bob Shapiro and, okay. And I'm going to say the guy's name because the story's breaking and everyone's coming forward, and hopefully this catches fire enough that we can finally close this chapter. Roger King was the president of CBS. He owned King World. His dad was Charles King. He owned the Little Rascals. He was a famous producer. He was mob. He was from New Jersey. He died shortly after the robbery in Vegas. He had a massive heart attack and just dropped dead. He knew Charlie Ehrlich. He's in the confession. Now, why does Roger King know Charlie and Joey? Because he's from New Jersey, and he knew the Ippolitos. So on June 13th, Howard Weitzman walks O.J. Simpson before noon. Oh, he's not going to talk to you guys. And it told you, well, I'm jumping off the case. No, he didn't jump off the case. He was removed from the case. Okay? And why was he replaced by Bob Shapiro? So O.J. Simpson tells you this guy called me, Roger King, who I didn't know, but he was the president of a studio, and I took his advice. And then Bob Shapiro goes on Larry King and says, this guy called me, Roger King. I was at the House of Blues for John Paul DeJorio's party. It was 10:30 at night. It's all recorded. It's in the public domain. And then the O.J. on FX producers write an article and say, there was this guy named Roger King, and he for somehow was involved in getting Bob Shapiro and OJ together. Well, that's weird. So let's connect the dots. So if Roger King doesn't know OJ Simpson personally, and he doesn't know Bob Shapiro, then that means only one thing. He knows Joey Ippolito and Charlie Ehrlich, and he knows they were there. And so they call him the next morning or late at night, whenever it was, we got a problem. And so he jumps on the phone on Monday and starts calling all these attorneys. So, and Weitzman's gone, and here comes Bob Shapiro, and here comes Henry Lee, and here comes Pat McKenna and Tom McNally, and it's over. It's like the Yankees, okay? It's like, here come the New York Yankees. You're toast. You're done. And that's how it happened. Weitzman got the boot. He just died. He's gone now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Weitzman just died.
Okay. Now, you're saying that Charlie Ehrlich shows up at OJ's house at Rockingham there, knocks on the door. Hey, OJ, how are you? We want some money. Now, had OJ known him before this?
He only knew him for 3 months. He just recently met him, and that's why OJ says in his book, a guy I had recently met. If you watch the Judith Regan interview also, OJ says, so this guy shows up, a guy I had recently become friends with, and he tells me something weird going on over at Nicole's. Now, that's a lie. OJ's tricking you. He doesn't want to talk about the cocaine.
Right.
He's saying that Charlie goes there and says, oh, there's some promiscuity. I went to Cabo, and these guys were talking about Faye Resnick and Nicole having these kinky parties with drugs and all these other guys. And OJ's like, why are you telling me that, man? Just read chapter 6. That's how they play it. And also the same thing in the Judith Regan interview. If you scrub to the interview 145:20 for 15 minutes, just listen to OJ tell you. Now, he uses his real name. And that confused a lot of people. Well, who's Charlie? Oh, it's his alter ego. No, it's not. Well, why would he use his real name? And this took me a long time to figure this out, too. He uses Charlie's real first name because he knows you'll say he would never use his real first name. It's a massive trick, and it's fascinating to me. I think OJ is a genius to me. People try to tell me he was an idiot. He dropped the glove, planted. He left all his hat and his blood there and all this. He wasn't smart. No, he's a genius. He beat you. You lost, period. He's still making money. So it's, and we can go into the evidence and how they missed the glove at first and all that. Where's the knife? And, but,
well, my question, yeah, before we get to a break is what is OJ's relationship with Charlie now? If you've done this kind of thing, well, like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you had this thing happen between two people. You're going to keep an eye on each other and you're going to have communications back and forth to make sure that things are cool. What's their relationship today?
They're still friends. And that's part of the ruse. Now, when Charlie first came forward to the producers, there was a different guy. He said he hated O.J. Simpson. And so that was his motivation was, I hate O.J. He cost me a bunch of money in Vegas. He's held this over my head for 25 years. I'm like his slave because he always threatens that he's going to reveal that I'm the guy. There's no statute of limitations. I'm going in. And that's why Charlie was at the Vegas robbery. He was forced to be there. Okay. He was forced because OJ's hung this over him like, can't touch me, man. I could rat you out right now. You got nothing. And they thought of killing OJ. They were going to off him. Joey Ippolito was. And they threatened his family multiple times when he was going to squeal about and he was in jail, started to panic like, I can't. This is why am I? They're like, just chill out, man. You better chill out. You're stuck in here. Your family's just dwindling in the wind. So just relax. And then when he gets acquitted, it's like the dream scenario. Charlie gets acquitted too. They all get off the second America's gut punched on October 3rd, 95. So they're still friends. You'll see pictures of that. There still goes to the strip club. Charlie runs a strip club. OJ still goes there. OJ still flies to Miami. His parole's up. He can travel now. So it's just, of course they're in on it together. You know what I mean? It's like they're both trying to make a bunch of money. Let's make a movie. Let's show the murders. Let's show everybody we did it. Well, how do you do that without putting Charlie in jail? So that's why there's people had a hard time trying to figure out how to pay them. We had a deal. We had a $20 million deal at one time. It was very close to actually happening in 2019.
And what happened to that?
Well, there was some snake moves where people were trying to cut each other out of the deals, and then the studios wanted, oh, we don't want to pay a felon, and we're not going to pay anyone. Well, if you ain't paying them, they're not going to do it with you. So Hollywood tried to hustle them, and they kind of walked on them.
How can Charlie possibly confess to this without winding up in the jackpot?
And that's the best part. That's one of my favorite parts. So a source went to the LAPD and the LA FBI, got laughed at. He went forward. He said, look, this is the guy. They met with him, didn't believe him. So at that point, the police thing was dead. They're never going to reopen the case. You have a double jeopardy. Just put yourself in the shoes of the judge or the district attorney. The cops come to you and go, hey, we heard about a project in Hollywood by this guy named Charlie. There's a script and there's a tape. He says he was there at the murders. Okay. Let's go prosecute him. Okay, who's the witness? O.J. Simpson. Are you going to put him on the stand? Nope. Where's the knife? No one knows. Is there any evidence? Nope. Wait, what about all the evidence at the LAPD? It's all destroyed. Johnny Cochran and Bob Shapiro annihilated the evidence. It's useless. What do you got? You don't have anything. So that's why he knew, which I thought was fascinating when I first heard him tell this version of that. I was like, wow, these guys are like, this is like next level genius. Like, because they asked him in meetings, they'd be like, well, aren't you afraid to go to jail? Who's going to put me in jail? Who's going to do it? He talks like this. What are you going to do? You got nothing. So it's like this play. It's like a trick. Go ahead. Try to put me in jail. Let's see the judge sign that warrant to and a grand jury testimony that you're going to say I was there. What do you got?
Not only that, but if they do try and put him in jail, if there's a trial, he probably would win. And that would just make the value of all this just go through the roof from 20
the
million.
The LAPD, they think it's worth $100 million.
Yeah.
They used to balk at the $20 million. But my point is, like, the LAPD was embarrassed. And if you look at the stories that broke...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
They're talking about like the embarrassment. The LAPD would be embarrassed for the most time in 50 years. They don't want to go there, and they don't need to. It's about the media, and the media blocked this story for 2 years. They're a fraud. They're a sham. I could name people. I'm not going to name them. They block stories all the time. Hollywood is a cesspool of shallowness and greed. They didn't want to destroy OJ. They still make money off the case. They're not about truth and justice. I am, and that's why I came forward, because I can bring healing, closure, for the victims, for the families, beat O.J. Simpson, beat the New York Yankees. That's what my book talks about. I'm going to beat the New York Yankees. Help me. I don't own CBS. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a media guy. Okay? I'm a producer. So a lot of people tried to stop this, and I'm glad for people like you. You have the courage to have me on. There were other people that had courage.
But real quick, we're about to take a commercial break. But explain to me, because you only want to use your first name, Chris. But the thing is, all these people involved know your voice. This is no secret who you are. Everyone's who are you hiding from?
Well, if I did a TV interview, then obviously they're going to know who I am. But just like in Hollywood, you know, people use stage names, and Madonna's not her real name, and right. Jonah Hill, that's not his real name. And so it's just, you kind of have to create a character and know the character, and that's who I am. But people want to know really who I am and I'm ready to come forward, I will. But right now is not the time yet, because I have a mission and a goal, and you're helping that, which I really appreciate, but we're not there yet. No one knows the story. There's 320 million people in the country. There's 7.2 billion people on this planet. Who knows about it? There's not many. So,
Real quick, OJ knows you. OJ knows your voice. Charlie knows you. Charlie knows your voice. Who is it you want to prevent from knowing you? The stalkers?
Like I said, I'll come forward. No, I'll come forward when the time is right. But I think just until this thing really volcanoes. Well, I mean, let's remember, we're talking about a mafia story. There are children, second generation mob guys who are getting exposed in this. Their dads, their uncles. Okay. So I'm not going to just put an open invite out there. Come find me. do a little work, you know, before you try to do that.
We're talking today to Chris, investigative producer from L.A. You could find him at june12101@gmail.com if you want to send him some tips or some information. Now, Chris, a couple of things real quick because we only have about 15 minutes. Heidi Fleiss. Now, you hear O.J. ranting and raving on one of those 911 tapes about Heidi girls. What do you know?
Okay, so I'm not going to say the girl's name, this prostitute, because she will sue everyone and their mother, and she's involved in a lot of stuff. So on the tape in 93, the tape of O.J. smashing the door and yelling, and Cato shows up, and Nicole's calling, he's back again, that famous tape. Now O.J.'s yelling in the background, there's hookers, there's drugs, there's this. So what that is, and this took a long time to find out what this was, and I actually met this person. So the gal who worked for Heidi Fleiss was also an actress and was a stand-in on this movie. She sees O.J. on the set of Naked Gun. She's the stand-in for Nicole, whatever, the buxom blonde. And she, Anna Nicole Smith, she's playing her. She mouths off to O.J. on the set. Oh, Keith Z. She was engaged to Keith Z. I'm not going to say his last name, okay? She was engaged to him at one time. She goes to O.J. and says, yeah, oh, my ex-boyfriend used to sleep with Nicole all the time. And, oh, you know, she was rubbing it in his face. So O.J.'s like, what? Who are you? And he finds out she works for Heidi Fleiss. So he goes home. He goes straight to Nicole's after the set. And he starts kicking in the door, starts screaming, my kids, you're putting these. That's her.
Okay.
Because she's talking. And so that's Keith Z and her rubbing it in O.J.'s face. And he snaps and they record that. She's in the book, You'll Never Make Love in This Town Again, which is about all the famous people that did cocaine and had prostitutes, and there's some famous names in there that I'm not going to say.
Okay, now what about, take us through the whole, Charlie shows up at OJ's house step by step from that point to the murders, the cleanup, everything.
Okay, yeah. And so for your listeners, I'll give them a piece of this. I'm not going to say every single thing because, look, I wasn't there, okay? And by the grace of God, I was allowed to be given this story. So some things have to go on faith and belief, leap of faith. I wasn't there, nor were you, nor were any of these people listening. We don't know exactly what happened, who got struck first, was there threats first, were they yelling at each other? We don't know. The only way we'll ever know is if OJ and Charlie come fully forward, which I think they should. So, with that being said, here's the events as I tell them and as my investigators tell them. At 10:15 p.m. on June 12th, Sunday, Charlie shows up at Rockingham demanding money on a drug debt from multiple people surrounding O.J. Simpson. O.J. freaks out, pretends to throw his golf club through the Bentley window, is beyond fuming. He hates Nicole. He hates Keith. He hates Faye. He says, Charlie, get in the Bronco. We're going to Nicole's. I don't want to go to Nicole's. What's going on? What are you talking about? No, get in the Bronco. We're going to Nicole's. They drive over there together. They land at about 10:30, and they sit in the alley. OJ puts the cap on, the gloves. Charlie looks at him. What are you doing? You look like a psycho. Look at this knife. And OJ tells you this in the book, so you got to cross it all together. And Charlie says, don't take that knife. I'll hold the knife. But that's not true. Charlie has his own knife, a double-edged blade, because he carries a knife and a gun. And OJ has a knife that he grabbed from his bathroom, a Swiss Army knife, a Victor Onyx, thin blade, not that long, very sharp, thin. Takes that knife, runs down. They come over to Nicole's. Now they're sitting in the alley. And they come through the back gate together. And when they come through, there's Ron Goldman and there's Nicole out front by the door. She's barefoot. She just came out to let him in. He's holding an envelope with Judita's sunglasses or her glasses. He has keys in his hand. He never makes it in the house. He borrowed a car. The car's parked there on the side of the road on Dorothy. They come through. They start shouting and yelling and arguing. That's why you hear Ron go, hey, hey, hey. That's Robert Heitstra's testimony. I heard a guy yell, hey, 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 at 10:38 p.m. The fight begins, and two people get murdered. Who got stabbed first? Who cuts who? Doesn't matter. There's two killers. There's two coroners. There's two knives and one giant farce. And they escape. They strip all their clothes down. That's why they find change in the driveway. Find a dime and a penny falling out of the pants as they're stripping their clothes down in Nicole's driveway. They take all the clothes. They bundle it all together, the knife, the shoes, the clothes, and they hand it to Charlie, and he holds it in his lap on the passenger side seat of the Bronco. That's why there's blood on that seat, blood on that console, and a half shoe print in blood on the passenger side. They drive back. They race through. They almost hit Jill Shively. She sees them. She says, I saw OJ with no shirt on. And Marcia Clark said, there's no way. He's wearing a tracksuit. Wrong. He's practically naked. They race through. They come back up to Rockingham. They pull up on Bristol Street. That's why Alan Park never sees them. They park there quietly. OJ jumps out, runs through the two tennis courts of his neighbors, sneaks around the back of the house, bangs on the wall to alert Cato Kalin to help him. Cato comes out, looks with a flashlight, sees OJ there half naked, bloody. Alan Park is there buzzing the gate. What's up? That's why he says, I saw Cato Kalin and a black man, 6 feet, all dark clothing, simultaneously. It's not black clothing, it's his skin. OJ sneaks behind Cato. Cato does the ruse, comes up to the door. Hey, what's up? Yeah, I, what's up? OJ's asleep. OJ buzzes him back. I was sleeping. Comes out, not wearing a bandage. He drips blood in the foyer, in the driveway. Loads the bags. The getaway's almost complete. Charlie's holding the Bronco on Bristol Street. That's why Alan Park says, I never saw it before, during, or after. And they made him sound crazy because the Bronco was never there. They load up the limo. They pull out. They're gone. Off to the airport. Go, OJ, go. Like his Hertz commercials. Charlie waits a few minutes, pulls the Bronco around, lands it awkwardly on Rockingham. Cato Kalin sees him. Jumps out. Something bad happened. What's going on? Cato's confused. What's going on? And Cato never says a word of this forever. Charlie gets in his car with the knife, the shoes, and the clothes and drives away. And there goes the case too. And the getaway is now complete. And that's the basics of it. As for details, if you want me to go into details of the murder through the autopsy and the evidence, I do know who struck who at some point. Ron Goldman mostly has two knife blade types on him. That's why Dr. Erwin Golden said there's two morphologically different types of stab wounds on the victims. He was kicked off the case the same day. It was a giant ruse. It was a giant farce. I'm sorry it happened. And it's my mission and my journey, through the grace of God, is to bring you the truth. You don't have to believe it. You can't turn back the hands of time. And that's what happened. And they've come forward. Charlie's getting exposed right now. It's in the national news. Google his name with the script. Put the word script, mystery script. That's what they're calling it. Because there's other people coming forward.
Now, this chronological narration you just gave us here, this is from Charlie's taped confession?
This is from the entire investigation altogether. These are not things that Charlie says to me. He doesn't tell you fully, I stabbed Ron Goldman 15 times.
How much detail?
He's never going to say that to you.
In this tape confession, how much detail does he go into?
The end of the tape, no one's ever heard.
Okay.
I've never heard the end. No one has. And I know who has the tape. I know where it is. I've listened to parts of it. It's chilling. You'll freeze. You just won't move. And one thing I want to say lastly is this story is about all of us. It's not about Charlie and OJ and Ron and Nicole and the families and the lawyers and the books and the media. It's not. It's about you and me. How didn't we know? How were we tricked? Our blind rage to look at OJ Simpson caused us to miss that that's not the story. There was someone else there. And I'll leave you with this one, too. Supposedly, I've had two people come to me with this. There was actually a third person there. I can't confirm it. We've had problems with the source who says he knows who it is. He's asked for money. He's tricked cops. We don't know if it's real. Charlie won't comment on it. OJ will never. OJ's been zero helpful. There's another person there, possibly. And there was a lookout. A guy saw him in the civil trial. I won't say his name. He said, I saw someone hunched in the bushes with slicked back black hair. Charlie's bald. He doesn't have slicked back hair. Who is that guy? And he testified under oath. I saw him. I was roller skating. And I saw a guy. I thought he was picking up poop from his dog. Someone was out front at 9 p.m., an hour before the murders. Who is that guy?
Now, this third person, still, if we were to hear the name, would we recognize the name?
I don't know his name. I've been given three different names, and supposedly he's a Latino or Mexican, and he's like a dealer that was with Charlie, and he knew some of the people involved in their circles. And I did a lot of research on this. I found two guys that matched the name, that matched the age that they said they were. I have found them, but I'm not going to go banging on their door and accusing them of this until I have more information. And the LAPD need to get involved. They need to kind of poke their head around and be like, look, because I'm not going to have my guys get their lives risked to go chase a ghost. We already have Charlie. We have OJ. Focus on them. If there was someone else there and he helped, there's some evidence of there's another shoe print there, a boot print on Ron's jeans at the crime scene. It's possible, but I don't ever really talk about that.
Now, off the air during the break, we had a little chat about guarding the juice and Jeffrey Felix, who was a corrections officer there. I think Lovelock, I believe, right? The day that OJ was getting paroled on his hotel theft case there, he starts muttering about Jeffrey Felix in the book. And then his attorney comes out there, does a little press conference, and he starts ranting and raving. They're going to sue Jeffrey Felix. So I had Jeffrey Felix's home phone number, and I called him up. And he was all ready to be fielding press inquiries that day. Okay? So then that struck me that he was in cahoots with OJ that day, and he knew that OJ was going to be talking about him that day in order to strike up book sales. Now, I had Jeffrey on the show. I think I did the first interview with Jeffrey Felix. And he tells me that OJ told him, I guess that's double hearsay, right? That two drug dealers showed up at his door and demanding money, and that the OJ followed them back to Nicole's house, which is the same story that you're telling me and that Charlie's telling you. What do you make of that?
Well, I like the word two, because maybe that's helping us. So if OJ said there were two guys that showed up, then there's the other guy.
Yeah, I'm just going off my own memory, but that's what I remember.
That's fine. Well, I'm just telling you, because this is why we're all a team. We have to help each other. So if Jeffrey Felix said that OJ said two guys showed up, there's your Charlie and there's your, I won't say the name, there's your Charlie and there's your X factor of the guy, right? Now, and OJ came out after and said, oh, I never said that. And this is what OJ does. So he's going to befriend Jeff Felix. He's going to tell him a bunch of stuff. And then when Jeff wants to make a dollar of his own for himself, OJ is going to come out and bash him. And that's what OJ does. He does that to everybody.
Let me ask you this.
I do.
Because you contacted me a couple of months ago, okay? And since that time, OJ's come out and said, there's new information, this confession, Charlie, blah, blah, blah. What's OJ's motivation to be pumping this story up?
Well, he does a thing with the Athletic and says, I don't want to go to L.A. I could be sitting next to the real killer. Well, what's he talking about? Well, I gave him the name to the police and they should have looked at him. I'm surprised no one ever looked at who this guy was. Now, he's not coming to you to say it's Charlie Ehrlich. What he's saying to you is, I gave the police a name. There's somebody else, blah, 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 because he can just hold the name. So he can easily say, someone else was there. There was a real killer, because it benefits him to point it away from him. This is his game. That's why it has to end.
But
why would the media block the story,
Chris,
when he's coming out?
Real quick, because we're running out of time. But the thing is, OJ is promoting the Charlie story. And Charlie is saying
he's not promoting Charlie. No, he's not promoting Charlie. He never says Charlie's name.
No, he doesn't.
He only said that in 06. He only said that in 06. That interview was shelved for 12 years. No one heard him say Charlie's name. In the book, when people wrote the book, they didn't believe Charlie was a real guy. OJ's never revealed him.
This is
the big secret.
But this recent quote from OJ saying, I got new information. A guy's making a confession. I turned it over to my lawyers. That's clearly promoting this story.
He doesn't say the I think you're missing what he says in his thing. I have the article.
Yeah.
In the article, he says, I think there's another killer and I could be standing next to him in L.A. And I gave his name to the LAPD and I guess nobody cared. He never said Charlie's name.
He doesn't say Charlie's name, but he talks about a new guy coming out with a confession. And he used the words confession. We might be talking about different articles.
No, we're talking about different articles. It's not OJ doesn't know. The article that came out is saying there's a confession. That's from these producers. These guys went off from me and started to leak the story because they were disgusted by this in Hollywood. They came forward to these other reporters. That's what you're seeing now is, oh, there's this script that got leaked. Yes, they leaked it. So they have the copy and they're like, whoa, this guy says he was at the murders. What's going on? No, that came from the producers, yes.
Okay, I don't want to get into too much weeds here, but the story I'm talking about is O.J. Simpson thinks he found suspect who took ex-wife Nicole Simpson's life. Lawyers are looking into it, according to him. That just came out.
Where is that? Tell me where it is.
That's the problem. I can't. The guy didn't post the title. I found it recently. But
is it today we're talking about
now? It's a... September 10th.
In The Athletic.
That's
with
The Athletic?
Tom Florio or whoever, yeah.
Okay, I saw it in
a different
tabloid, something about world.
Well, unless... Yeah, what I'm saying is, I know what you're talking about because they all ask me that too, is yes, he came out and it seemed kind of... And I will make a final comment about this because it's God telling him to come forward. It's all the stars are aligning. So OJ comes out 3 weeks ago and says, well, there might be another killer. He never talks about this at all. He starts to seed the information because he knows what we're doing for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
He's trying to like poke his little head out, but he can't. He can't say it because then it puts him there. That's why they always pointed. They never could talk about Charlie because if you talk about Charlie, me and OJ did it. That's why OJ never could say, oh, there was someone else that did it. Well, how do you know that, OJ? That means you were there. Well, I saw him do it. That means you're there.
My question
is, he's caught.
You got all these guys now are working on this script and they're peddling the story that they're shopping it around all over the place. Does OJ have a financial interest in this thing moving forward?
Probably, because guess what? Once you sell that script, say a studio buys the script and they partner with Charlie, and OJ's little lawyers smell some money, right?
Right.
They start poking their head out. You better not show those murders. Guess what, OJ? We don't need you because once we have Charlie's rights and it's through his POV, we don't need you. It's not your story anymore. See, that's why Charlie knew that. As long as you have me, you tell my story through my eyes, no one can sue you. It's my story.
Okay.
That's why we partnered with them. We're not stupid.
We're out of time. Okay. I'm probably have to cut some ads out. Okay. But
yeah, no worries.
In just a minute or two, what do you want to leave us with?
I did this for Ron Goldman and Nicole and for all of us. It's not just about the victims and the perpetrators. It's about all of us. And the media should never block stories. I was treated extremely poorly by all the mainstream media outlets, and I hope the truth comes out. I appreciate you. You take some credit here for letting the light be shown. So I thank you, and if anyone wants to write me. I'll show you stuff. I'll talk to you. My door is open, and let's do it together. God bless.
And you can find Chris, the investigator, a producer from L.A., at June 12, all written out in words, 101 in numbers, at gmail.com. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.